Welcome to Psychic Elephant Radio. Tonight's feature of Only the Monsters is Chapter 4, The North. Please enjoy. Leave Granby immediately. Do not deviate again. Agatha's message bounces around in Melissa's head as she paces around the OmniWeb hub. She contemplates telling David, as she knows she'll hear "I told you so" from him repeatedly. She decides to try and keep this to herself, at least for the time being. Melissa takes a deep breath and walks towards the transport, smiling awkwardly at David.
Anything important?
Melissa pauses for a moment as she looks at David.
No, just a bunch of spam. Let's get going.
Melissa is surprisingly silent for the hour drive from Granby to Montreal.
Everything okay? You're awfully quiet. Like, completely silent. It's a little weird.
Yeah, I'm good. Just tired, I think. Plus all the emotions and stuff.
Yeah, I'm not buying it. But I respect you. And I know you'll tell me when you're ready.
David pauses for a moment as he looks at Melissa.
I mean, I'm only your partner. And we could possibly be spending the next few years working on this project together. So, whatever. It's cool.
David dramatically turns and looks longingly out the passenger side window and mumbles something about trust. Melissa whips the transport off the road and slams it into park.
Okay, don't be mad. But Agatha knows about our little party detour.
What? How the...
There was a message from her. I saw it in Granby.
Did you send any messages from there? They can track that, I think.
Nope.
Well, maybe she figured we stopped somewhere since we should have checked in by now. There's not a lot of settlements up here. Maybe she's bluffing.
I don't know. Something definitely seems off.
Did you respond?
Hell no.
David sighs a bit.
What do we do now?
I was hoping you had an idea. You're a writer. You basically lie for a living.
Okay. As soon as we see a hub, we'll respond. We say we had transport trouble. It was acting weird since the Wendigo incident, and the folks in Waterloo said someone in Granby could look at it. Your friends? Yep, they looked at it. We didn't realize there was a hub until the next morning, but we wanted to get moving since we were running behind.
Okay, yeah, let's say that. That'll work.
No, we are not going to do that. We are not going to lie to a bunch of ancient and super powerful monsters. We are going to tell her the truth. We can't afford to make things worse, or she'll keep us running around for the next century. We'll fess up and be on our best behavior from here on out.
You don't think it's weird she knew where we were?
I think it was probably just an educated guess. Either way, honesty is probably the safest play. Honesty is respected.
Fine. We'll stop at the first hub we see.
Melissa and David enter the Montreal city limits, which now extends across the St. Lawrence River. Original architecture has been repurposed for labs and factories, as well as new council-funded facilities. The settlement is large, home to many scientists, both Strigoi and Shapeshifter. The trees are as tall as the synth blood factories, providing shade for the Strigoi, while just blocks away there are butcher shops and holding cells for the full moon. This will be their final stop before they enter the Northern Territory. Melissa pulls up to the first hub they see.
Well, let's get this over with.
I'll come in with you. We'll both send her a message. Move past this and get back to work. The sooner we get done with this, the sooner we go home.
You're so mature.
David is looking at himself in the reflection of the window, thinking about how cool he looks with the samurai sword on his back.
What's that?
They both send similar responses to Agatha's message. Agatha responds immediately and reiterates that for both their safety and the assignment, to absolutely not deviate from their itinerary. Also, in so many words, get back to work and never let this happen again. David is lingering at a hub, continuing to read his messages. Melissa walks past him and yells.
You heard her? Back to work, Owens.
Yeah, I'm coming. All these damn spam messages. I thought OmniWeb was going to fix this. I swear it's getting worse.
Probably all your superfan stalkers?
David smiles and laughs.
Oh, I'm sure. My God. There must be 30 stops here in Montreal. Let's get moving. First stop is Nun's Island.
This might be interesting. A bunch of retired recruiters. Rumor has it, they gave them the island years ago.
They arrive at Whitney Mills' home, a lovely two-story with a big yard with lots of trees. Whitney, like nearly all the recruiters, is a Strigoi, a most likely former military. The routine picks right back up where they left off. Some small talk as Melissa sets up the recording equipment. Whitney begins to tell her story.
When we first started recruiting, we were just going for numbers. Any able-bodied Strigoi we came across, we gave them the pitch. Synth blood, a purpose, a way to help, a better world, etc. I mean, we weren't lying. You know, it's why we are all here. Healthy, happy, living in nice places. You know, not living in huts drinking animal blood and barely surviving. That was the High Council. That was us.
Who recruited you?
I'm sorry?
How did you get involved?
Oh, wow. It's been so many years. My husband at the time knew a guy who was close with some elders that were on the ground level when the council formed. They wanted women to go out so that it was less intimidating to other women. You know. Anyways, as time went on, we got more specific requests, like looking for specific doctors and scientists who eventually were responsible for setting up the synth factories. We helped orchestrate the settlements too. We went far west and helped relocate any wayward Strigoi. Even helped recruit a lot of shapeshifters too. Once the world became the way it is, we were no longer really needed. We played our part and now we are enjoying retirement. At least for now, until we get bored. But it's nice to settle down. We were on the move for nearly 30 years.
I feel your pain, sister.
We've been on the road for like a month.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a fishing trip to prepare for.
David and Melissa interview two more former recruiters before leaving the island, both boasting similar stories to Whitney's and both in a hurry to go on the same fishing trip. As they head towards Rapids Park, Melissa turns to David.
How did you get involved? Did a recruiter show up at your doorstep and say the High Council needs you?
Not quite. I was a little late to the party. I was in Japan when the fall began. Let's just say, it took a while to find my way back to New York. Like 3 years across Europe. Then, I hitched a ride on what I believe was a stolen cruise ship. It was loaded with a few hundred Strigoi, all the blood they found in Europe, and piloted by a couple ancient vampires. When we docked in New York, the High Council sent a welcome party for us. They were pretty established by then and looking for people to work in their academics department. How did you get involved?
I went to them. They had set up in NOLA. I saw it as a way to learn more about monsters, you know. Plus, it felt good to connect. And it helped regulate my emotions.
Hear, hear.
They arrive in Rapids Park, a mere 20-minute drive from Nun's Island. Rapids Park is an expansive park along the river, home to wonderful scenery, wild birds, and two Strigoi scientists who are studying a small group of chupacabra that are held in captivity.
Oh man, I hope I get to see them up close.
David chuckles and smiles.
Sounds about right.
They walk to a remote part of the park, where they find what looks like a maximum security prison. A loud buzzer sounds as they approach the gate. They are immediately greeted by identical twin brothers, turned Strigoi scientists, Emile and Alphonse Dubois. Emile, the more outspoken of the two, introduces them. The brothers rarely leave the park and, only ever speaking to each other, are extremely introverted and awkward.
Welcome. I'm Emile, and this is my brother Alphonse. Please, let us continue to our lab for our discussion.
Alphonse stares blankly at the two historians. Emile leads them into the facility and to their lab.
Thank you. We won't take much of your time.
It's quite all right. Truth be told, we don't get many visitors.
That's surprising.
Melissa gives David a dirty look.
I know this seems strange to you, but what we are doing here by better understanding the origins and behaviors of the Chupacabra, we could better understand our origins.
How's that?
Your colleague would probably understand a little better, being she spent most of her life studying these things. We did some research on you two once we heard you were coming. Apologies if that was inappropriate. You see, Strigoi and Chupacabra are similar genetically. Both are blood-dependent, living blood that is, the difference being Chupacabra can live at full strength from animal blood, where Strigoi cannot. Somewhere in the past, the DNA split, ever so slightly. Studying them may help us to uncover some of the mysteries of our lineage.
So, this is similar to shapeshifters and Wendigo?
Melissa notices Alphonse staring at her, and still never saying a word.
I apologize for my brother. He doesn't speak very much, probably because in 1951, while on a heavy dose of LSD, I cut out his tongue. It would seem so, yes. Think of it like humans and primates.
David's eyes widened. Alphonse stands abruptly and leaves the office. Melissa and David look at each other with puzzled reactions.
He has an important matter to tend to.
Emile continues his story.
Of course, there are several differences too. Obviously, they don't speak, nor do they understand when spoken to. They are like animals, but untrainable. My brother and I have always been scientists, some would say on the fringe. We understand what needs to be done in the name of progress for knowledge. As I recall, a few years before the fall, we were in Mexico, or Texas possibly. We witnessed a chupacabra attack on a young man, nearly killed him. We witnessed several more, the same every time. Within a matter of minutes, the man began to transform. But the process was far faster than with Strigoi, and without the need for the blood transfer. We believe it is an enzyme that is in the chupacabra's saliva that gets transferred through bites, similar in some ways to how shapeshifters turn humans. But with no methodology behind it, simply, unintentionally, turning humans. Now, imagine if we could use those toxins from the saliva as a weapon, possibly. What would happen if a large dose was injected into a shapeshifter, for instance? Fascinating.
Alphonse returns to the office and nods to Emile.
And with full cooperation from the High Council, we are searching for answers about the origins of all creatures. We too are interested in history. Mr. Owens.
Emile glances at his brother.
Now, who wants to see them?
David turns to Melissa. Melissa interrupts.
We must get going, strict itinerary and all.
David begins to nod his head in agreement.
Surely, you could stay.
Melissa and David walk swiftly towards the gate. They wait for a moment for the twins to let them out, but the twins are stalling, staring at the two of them. Melissa speaks quietly under her breath.
Okay, guys, any day now.
We look forward to reading the history book once you've finished it.
The buzzer breaks the tension, and David and Melissa begin to double time it to the transport.
So, yeah. They totally fed people to the chupacabras, right?
Yeah, and I think they wanted to feed us to the chupacabras.
Or inject us with their spit weapon.
Melissa turns around to see if anything is following them.
Boy, Alphonse really liked you.
Be quiet. Stop.
Wow, and the feeling was mutual.
Melissa frantically points towards the compound and screams.
No, jackass, look!
They see what appears to be several chupacabra running in their direction.
Oh, come on!
Their double time becomes a triple time and then an all-out sprint.
They're way back. They can't catch us.
Those psycho twins are just screwing with us.
They jump in the transport and watch as the hideous creatures turn around and head back to the facility.
Untrainable? My ass.
They speed away from Rapids Park.
Oh, and I'd like you to meet my brother. I did a bunch of acid and cut out his tongue.
It's cool, though. We're scientists.
Luckily, our next several stops seem routine.
I've had enough of Operation Artichoke to last me for a while.
So the two got back to the routine for the next few weeks. Interview, record, upload, and repeat.
Okay, on to our last stop in Montreal before we head out into the Great White North.
Oh, this is fun. We got our first shapeshifter interview. Yeah, ever met one?
A shifter? Sure, quite a few over the years. Mostly in passing. You?
Same, but now I get to ask them a million questions. I'm so excited. We are here. Let's go.
All right, I'm coming.
They enter the mostly shapeshifter research facility. It is located in the western part of Montreal, across the river from Laval. Melissa pushes the elevator button, and the doors open immediately.
What floor?
Melissa flips through her notes.
12th.
The doors open, and the two wander down a hallway. They are met by a friendly voice.
Are you lost?
Yeah, I think so. We are looking for...
Room 129.
That's us. Come on in.
We're here from Archives to interview you. Chase Garvey, right?
That's me, yep. I got the heads-up email. I mean message.
Great. Mind if we set up here?
Sure.
David and Chase have a little small talk as Melissa sets up the recorder. Chase has read several of David's books and asks when his next novel will be available. David enjoys the interaction with another admirer.
All set up, so tell us about yourself and what it is you do here.
Sure thing. My department, the Agriculture Department, developed genetically modified seeds. They are repellent to critters, so shifters can grow food and not have to worry about the crops getting destroyed. Completely cutting out the need for pesticides. Nothing glamorous, I know, but I think it's really helped. Not like developing synthetic blood so you guys can live, but, you know, after the fall, we didn't have quite the sense of urgency you guys had. A bit lower stakes.
Pun intended?
No pun intended. But yeah, farming is pretty essential to shifters.
A voice comes from the direction of the door.
Hello?
Hey man, we're trying to do an interview here.
Chase looks at Melissa.
Sorry, this is my buddy Ray.
Oh, my bad.
Melissa is so excited to question another shapeshifter.
Oh, it's fine, come join us.
So, this is how we conduct ourselves now?
Melissa shushes David.
Ray here came up with our flexware, you know, so we don't rip our clothes apart when we shift.
Yeah. I used to work for a famous clothing company back in the day.
Cool. So, how does it work? The shifting?
Whoa there, lady. So, you just think you can walk in here asking personal things like that? I'm just messing with you. What do you want to know? We're open books.
Sure.
Well, does it hurt to shift? Just tell me all about it.
Okay, so it kind of hurts, like, when you crack your knuckles. And we can do it whenever we want. We are stronger and faster when we shift. We also grow about 50%. We look all jacked and hairy. But before the flexwear, we'd shred the hell out of our clothes. Total pain in the ass.
Go on, full moon?
Yeah. That's when it gets tricky. During the full moon, we are stuck in permashift, and that's when our bloodlust is the worst. And that's also when humans could get turned way back when. We used to chain ourselves up for the full moon. If we hadn't, there'd be a whole lot more shapeshifters in the world.
Bloodlust?
Different than yours. We just want to kill everything and eat it. I guess it's more like meat lust.
Chase gives Ray a weird look.
So, were turnings heavily regulated?
For sure. Only a handful of elders possess the discipline to turn a human without ripping them to pieces. That's why they were used to turn specific humans. I think a few of those elders are on the High Council now.
Yeah, same with the Strigoi. Had to be careful. A 50-50 survival rate, and you just can't turn anyone. That's how we ended up with the Mistaken. Sociopaths turned superhuman.
Are you guys both werewolves? Or is that, like, rude to ask?
No, you're fine. I'm a werecat, actually. But Chase is a werewolf.
Cool.
Chase laughs.
Okay, guys. Thanks so much for your time. Anything you'd like to add before we wrap? Maybe some kind words about the High Council.
David gives Melissa a little smile.
Yeah, I mean, they seem to have done some good and helped us out and everything. Made life a little easier.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks so much. We are going to get going before Melissa asks you to shift for her or something. So, we'll get out of your hair. Pun intended.
The shapeshifters both laugh and walk with the Strigoi to the elevator where they say their goodbyes. During the elevator ride down, Melissa laughs.
I really was about to ask them to shift for me.
Yeah, I figured as much.
Let's hit the hub, then hit the road, yeah?
The duo arrives at their final stop in Montreal. David is happy to move on. The sooner they finish, the sooner he can get back home. They upload the last of the interviews and check messages for further instruction.
Okay, so we are heading to Ottawa, then Toronto, with a few other stops sprinkled in.
Yep, just saw that. I get the same messages.
Oh, you're actually checking messages again?
Yeah, I'm trying.
Okay, enough with the Wrigley Field shit already.
I'm sorry. What?
No, not you. Just these bizarre messages I've been getting, all from an unknown sender.
Right. What do they say exactly?
Let me see. The blind eye at Wrigley Field?
Okay, so this really is bizarre, because I've been getting that same message for months.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed tonight's episode. Tune in next week for Chapter 5, The Council. If you liked what you heard, please consider giving us a good rating. Check out our Facebook page on Psychic Elephant Radio. For more content, please visit our Patreon. Opening theme song by Pygmy Moose. All content property of Psychic Elephant Radio.